Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. You got me, Kevin Hagelin. You have Corey Majors. You have the famous Mike Bacsik. And joining us for the next 2 days, the man who has always already benefited from good fortune this morning, it is Chris Strong. Chris, how the heck's your day going already?
I mean, it's a 10 out of 10. I just got here. Someone saw my Stars jersey. They were like, hey, I have two tickets to the game tonight, and shared them with me. So,
because they couldn't go?
They can't go. So you'll see me at the AAC tonight.
Wow.
I thought meant share, like he had a ticket and he was going to invite you, but there's only one seat and you sit in his lap.
Yeah, sit on his lap.
That's what you thought he meant?
Well, that's sharing the ticket.
Uh-huh.
I used to do that with my dad.
You could see how that's fundamentally different than a stranger he met in the lobby, right?
That's somewhat.
Somewhat.
But okay. If you're going to share a ticket, there's only one seat to share.
Hold on. You did this as an adult? Like, you've gone and sat in your dad's lap as an adult? Or
I hope he was a child.
I think you told me this recently.
Oh, my God.
Recently, you did share a ticket with your dad. Like, you went in for the first part of a game, and then he came in and sat in there for the second part of the game. I feel like you told me this a couple years ago.
We had, like, two tickets in the lower bowl, two tickets in the upper bowl.
That's right.
And so it's like, well, you'll get to see the game from a perspective that you don't need binoculars, and then we'll switch.
Yeah, that happened.
I like that. Can you go ahead and give me cut number 5, please, Chris? Because we need to talk some more about the Rangers.
And now Berger hits one high toward left. Did he do it again? Give me a double! Home runs for Jake Berger.
And we talked a lot yesterday about Jake Berger. We got the number on Jake Webb coming in at 1 year, only $1.5 million. I do believe it might be $1.25, but it's really low. But when you talk with Fenstermaker, the GM, and then Chris Young, the president of baseball operations, one of the things that they come back to again and again and again, we still recognize, this is from Chris Young, we still recognize that the roster is not complete and we need to keep pushing. There is still a lot to do. So I want to start with this. We are all pretty pleased by the trio of moves with Berger, the reliever, and bringing back Evo, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Those are really good moves.
Okay.
Very happy so far.
And hell, the offseason front office additions were nice too. Coaching staff changes.
Schumacher, absolutely. But what's next? Because when you hear Fenstermaker and Young both saying, hey, look, there's still a lot we have to do. This roster's not where we want to look at. Is there, I don't know if it's a name, if it's just focusing on the bullpen, like where is your focus next for this team?
Kirby Yates.
Okay. Kirby Yates specifically.
Specifically Kirby Yates. The guy had an ERA close to 1. I think it was 1.17. I need to look that up again. But
what do you love about his pitching? You watched him pitch a lot this year.
He is inconsistent in the best way possible with the hitter. I can't figure him out. If you've watched me call a game.
1.17 is right, by the way. His whip, 0.83.
And is he going to repeat that? I'll be honest. Probably not. That was, and he only blew one save all year. So he was close to perfect in save opportunities. But I would say this, when I'm like, oh, he set him up for the split finger, right? The fastball split finger, and he makes 92 look like 98 to the hitter. And it's because once the hitter's like, oh, he's going to the split, he throws a fastball 92 at the top part of the zone, and it freezes the guy because, like, crap, I thought for sure he was going to do this. Everything would suggest he set you up for this, and then he goes back to his fastball. Or when you think he set him up for the fastball, he's throwing two split fingers, and then he throws a third split finger. Yeah. So to me, he's in the great way inconsistent, so you can't figure out what is next, and he throws strikes. How many times have we, over, I don't know, the last decade, whether it was early on Neftali Feliz or recently Jose Leclerc, going, can you please stop walking people? Like, at least make them earn their way on sure. base for the tying run to get up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so you didn't feel like, at least last year, I can't remember going, oh no, Kirby can't throw strikes tonight. Does that make sense? Yeah. Where we've just gone through so many, whether it's a Aroldis Chapman, and I, you know, I'm not saying I like or dislike these guys I'm naming, but it's like, how many times have we had closers over the past decade that just seemed to, their downfall was they couldn't throw strikes, then they had to throw it down the middle, and then the dude whacked the ball because it was down the middle, and you're just like, well, you'd kind of deserve to lose this because sure. you couldn't throw strikes, so now you had to change your target to corners to middle. You actually hit your spot right down the middle, and then the ball got hit into the gap for a double, and we're losing another game that you thought you were going to win.
If we're talking Kirby Yates, are we talking 1-for-12? Do you think it's going to be 2-for-23? Like, what kind of money are we talking here?
I would guess 2-for-25.
2-for-25, okay.
That would be my guess. Okay. Now, maybe that would be too high. I do know the Rangers do it this way for bullpen. They have tiers, and what they do is they set up guys, like, let's say closer is tier one. You're yep. in this, and then setup guy is tier two. Seventh inning guy that maybe middle reliever is like tier three. And they have like a price tag for those tiers. This is how much. And then if they say, man, this guy is going for a tier two price, but we believe he's a tier one.
Yep.
That would be Kirby Yates yep. last year. We think he can close. We do have Jose Leclerc, but we think he can close. But he's going for a tier two price where we think he's a tier one reliever.
Is there any concern that when the season starts, I'm just asking, he was unfreaking believable last year. He'll be 38. When the season starts. So if you're talking yeah. multi-year or anything like that, does that give you any pause?
Yes, that's why two is, if it gets to three, I don't think teams are, to your point, it would be interesting if teams went to three, but I think that's why I would say two. But I can see if they're like, we're just not doing that. We're not going to give yeah. a multi-year deal to a dude who's close to 40, but I do know that the organization and the team really liked Kirby Yates. That being said, they also loved that they had him at, was it $4.5 million last
yeah,
year?
Or something really low. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Now you're looking at somewhere between $12 to $15 million yep. is probably your per year cost.
That would be my guess as well. Corey, is there a particular, I don't know if it's player, position?
I got two okay. things that I'd like. One, I still want to poke around at the Jordan Montgomery reunion. Like,
ooh,
still kind of
I like that, yeah.
Just see
like
how that going. Because adding another left-handed arm, I just don't trust Malley, for one. Like, I don't...
Fair.
There's something about him I don't trust. Bradford, I do like a lot. And I think he can be... Man, he could be a great number three for you this year. I never think he's going to be that top-level guy. But because DeGrom and Evaldi's injury history is so... prevalent to what they are, I feel like they're going to miss some games. One of those two is going to miss some games, and I would still like a top-tier pitcher in that. And I think Jordan Montgomery still can be that. I just think he may have gone through a mental, like, he was broken after the contract didn't turn out to what he wanted. And I think that happens to guys sometimes. So that and maybe another, maybe like a left-handed bat that could play outfield and rotate around.
I was going to just ask... while we were talking about some of these players, do you go back and just check in on David Robertson? Like, I know he opted out and there's thought that he could retire. Do you just go back and check on that?
Yeah, I guess so. I would. In fact, the Montgomery thing, I was thinking about this, Corey, as you were talking about that. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot. Is maybe you wait a while on this, because I bet the Diamondbacks right now are like, yeah, we'll eat some of the salary, this and that, but it's only early mid-December. What if you get to February 1st and that owner tells his general manager, president, you're not bringing him to spring training? I mean, the comments he made, the comments the owner made would suggest there's no way, and I'm sorry, I don't know where the Diamondbacks train. I know it's in Arizona, but it used to be Tucson. There's no way that they are bringing him to spring training, right? If you're the owner, you tell the general manager,
I would be stunned.
Do not bring him to spring training, but also we're not eating 22.5 of the $22.5 million,
yeah.
but whatever it takes. So I'm wondering on February 1st, right around there is when the Diamondbacks really give in and maybe you say, hey, here's this dude, not very good, doesn't, you know, probably not going to be a big leaguer ever. Maybe you guys get lucky and he is. and you guys take $15 million and we'll pay $7.5 million. I would really like that because Montgomery could go to the pen if you needed it.
Yeah. Scottsdale, by the way. Salt River Fields in Scottsdale.
So I hope mine makes sense. I actually focused in on a player that I think you can pick from this group and ship out to make something happen. So I would like to look at the group of Leody Taveras, Nate Lowe, Ezekiel Duran, and Josh Smith. I picked a big group.
Yeah.
I'm not saying
we're... Re-say that?
Okay. Leody Taveras, Nate Lowe, Ezekiel Duran, and Josh Smith. By no means am I saying let's get rid of them all. I'm saying maybe like let's do something with one of them because it feels as though there's not a useful spot for all of them on the team. Now, I realize if you get ravaged by injuries, then we might backtrack and be like, oh, there could have been a super useful spot. But these feel like four players who all have different kinds of value to get you what you want. So while we're talking about, I know Montgomery would be a money situation. Kirby Yates is a money situation, but there are other holes that you can fill. And I think those four players right there, one of them in there holds the key to picking up another piece of what you want.
I think you're right. You know, the thing is just what's the value of each of these guys to other teams? And to your point, I'm assuming you're saying because probably a bullpen piece or.
Yes.
I know, Corey, you said left hand. I think it has to be right hand.
Hitter?
Yes, in the outfield. I have to have a replacement for Evan Carter when lefties pitch. And I can always move Lankford to center, so it doesn't have to be a center fielder. If he can't play center, great. But I would look at it and go, well, maybe I need a fourth outfielder, right-handed bat, or I need an eighth inning guy. It might be tough to pick up a closer with those guys. But, man, if I could pick up an eighth inning guy with one or two of those guys, let me ask you this. I think this might be an easy question, but maybe not, because it's based off of 2023 and 2024. Both had very different years. A team says, I want this guy, Josh Smith or Ezekiel Duran. Who are you hoping they say?
Ezekiel Duran, I just kind of ranked them, and I went Taveras would be first off my list that I'd be most willing to deal. I realize the value you get might change that. Then Duran, then Smith, then Lowe, which might surprise some people.
I would, yeah, I'm Duran first.
Okay.
And I think that, you know, I had a discussion with somebody yesterday on the fan text. They were like, look, Duran has more pop than Josh Smith. And I'm like, yeah, but Smith's far more of a reliable hitter. The pop that comes from Duran was great. And then all of a sudden it just disappeared and he couldn't find his swing anymore. There's no level playing for him. It's just, I'm trying to put one out of the park every time. So, and I feel like I have a more consistent infielder with Josh Smith too. So I do want to keep him around if I can as a backup utility infielder. But a lot of people are like, why is he not a starter? There's a lot different, a lot bigger difference where he is on this team comparatively. But yeah, I would go Duran first and then Taveras.
Okay.
Then Lowe, then Smith. That would be my order of moving on.
Are you going to hope that they ask for Duran as well, or are you going a different direction?
I think I would rather keep Smith.
Okay.
But I do. Ezekiel Duran is one of those guys. He's not going to. I don't think he's going to be Cole Reagans. Okay. I don't know. Different position.
Go on and be something great.
I don't think he will, but I really like a lot of things I saw from him in 23, but it obviously disappeared after the All-Star break and never really came back in 2024.
His ceiling is higher than Josh Smith's. Maybe Josh Smith met his ceiling last year.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
And I wonder for a guy like Ezekiel Duran, let's just say I'm going to trade him to a bad team. Let's just say I traded him to Colorado.
Okay.
And he became an everyday second baseman and didn't have to worry about four different positions and just like, hey, you're just playing second base. We're not here to win 100 games. We're not trying to make the playoffs. You're going to play every day. Like, I wonder if then all of a sudden he takes off, not into an all-star or anything like that, but you're like, dang, man, he's a pretty consistent, you know, 255 hitter with 22 home runs. And I think he does have that ability where, to your point, Josh Smith, I think he has the ability to hit 300 with 10 home runs.
Yep.
300 is a very high average in today's game. Sure. It's a top 10 average in the American League, but it's just a matter of what do you see, you know, better or more. But I do think they both have value in the marketplace.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next from the brilliant mind of Corey Majors.
Don't say that.
Went from the average mind
you don't have to
of
say
Corey
that.
Majors.
You just say mind.
When is the last time you felt like the Cowboys had a distinct coaching advantage? Let's talk about it next right here on The Fan.
Oh, it's a fake punt. Anger throws the ball out to Wanye Thomas, and he caught the ball, but short of the first down.
Wow.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Question, Corey. I know we normally do. I know we normally do shout outs.
Who sings this? Or
Pearl Jam.
Oh, yeah.
Look up what that means. Shout outs are normally on Friday, but somebody had a high school football shout out for a game tonight.
Oh.
Will you allow such a thing?
Hey, if it's high school football.
It's Thursday night semifinal, and they're playing on Thursday?
I mean, a lot of games to jam in.
Don't we have the Niners and Rams tonight? That's Thursday
We've
night
We've eliminated
football.
A lot of the high school games.
That's true, but Malakoff is playing tonight. Wanted to shout out my home team, Malakoff, playing tonight at AT&T in the state semifinals for the second straight year. 30-game win streak. I'm conflicted about this, though.
We have already given this shout-out, actually. Yeah.
Okay.
Mike and I,
I'm going to shout out against them.
We were yelled at a video. We did a video at Palmer's after I did the hot chicken.
Yeah. There was a lady that came up and she was like, can you just say go Malakoff Tigers?
Okay. And I think that game is at the Ford Center, not AT&T Stadium. I just want to make sure you go to the right place. I'm sorry. I am supposed to be rooting against you.
Oh, because of Paradise?
Because they're playing the Paradise Panthers, and that's where pretty much all of Jess's family lives right now, is in Paradise. So.
Dude, and hey, based on that, you told me recently that that family was involved with the NASA. Is that a thing that we can talk about, or is that off air?
Yeah, some of it is off air.
All right, never mind. Well, you know what?
Yes.
If y'all want to come out to Martin House Brewing and hear
about
this on a Saturday, come out on from 1 to 5, and Kevin will probably tell you this story. It's fascinating.
Just got to make sure you're not recording. All right. So
the Star in Frisco. Yeah, it's the Star is where that game is.
Corey, you came up with this idea and you pitched it out and I liked it because it's a great idea. But I also hated it because the answer I had was not super positive. When is the last time you felt like the Cowboys had a distinct coaching advantage? What led you to this?
Well, you've talked about this for years.
Sure.
Let's go back. 2010, I believe, was when 2011, let's
right.
say. Jason Garrett, you didn't feel like with him and Rob Ryan that you had a coaching advantage. And so every year I've been like, okay, we do, we don't. And I was just kind of curious this year, you don't feel like your coaching staff has been a difference maker for your team. If your team is everything's good and everything's even across the board, can your coaching staff outcoach the guys on the other side of the field? And for some reason,
I don't think so.
I don't feel like it's been a while. But when I asked you this, you actually said it was sooner than I thought.
So my answer was last year, but it was last year for somebody who ain't here anymore.
That's right.
And so it was Dan Quinn. And that's why I kind of hated your question, too, because I thought, well, that's not a good sign. If I was like, oh, yeah, it was just last year. But as a coach that went away and is now coaching another team in the division that is better than you or has a better record than you. And so that's what was concerning to me is my immediate thought was nothing from the Mike McCarthy era, which maybe people think that's unfair to him. But my thought was it was Dan Quinn the last couple of years and the turnover factory that this defense was. I felt like they could scheme to anybody and force the turnovers when you really needed them, not Mike McCarthy.
Your offense last year was number one in points.
Yeah.
Your defense last year in points was number five. Your team, 1-5 and five. Yeah, yards and points, 5. And they were really, really good. The defense the year before that won the division or lost in the division round, they were 5th in points again in defense.
Yeah.
And when Dan Quinn got here, they were 7th in points in defense. So the entire 3 seasons,
it's pretty dang good.
That Dan Quinn was here, really good. The year that before he got here, 28th.
Wow.
This year, 31st. And so
holy moly.
Now that being said,
hold on. Did you just say so the bookend 28 before he got here, 31st now that he's gone, and in between 7th, 5th, and 5th?
Yes.
Yikes. Yes.
So, like, that's the quality of what that coach was putting out. Now, he had one thing that they did really well that destroyed teams, and he was like, we're pass rushing. We're gonna suffocate you with the pass rush, and that's gonna force turnovers. You're not gonna put as many points on the board. Now, what we saw, there were some teams that knew how to beat that.
Sure.
And so that was the. But for the most part, you were able to overcome everybody. Now, go look at the offense, Kevin. The last 3 years, while Dan Quinn was here, 1-4-1.
They've been very good.
And this year, they're 21.
Okay.
And so with a bad defense, they're a bad offense also?
Now, I know part of the argument, at least for the last month or so, is going to be that you've been without Dak. But make no mistake about it. This offense was struggling when he was here as well. And I know people will argue this pretty much forever, right? Was it the offense that benefited directly from the defense, or was it the defense that benefited directly from the offense being able to hold on to the ball and methodically at times move it down the field? The answer is probably both.
Can I ask this based off of the Quinn was a major advantage, and I do like him, don't get me wrong. How much was it Quinn, and how much has it been Micah Parsons? Because this defense was horrible this year without Micah Parsons. Sure. Micah Parsons comes back, and they're, I don't want to say good, but they're like a solid defense.
Yeah. They weren't good with him before, though. So it did take a minute for him to get integrated into the Zimmerman or the Mike Zimmer defense.
True.
And now it looks like that, actually, it kind of looks like that injury helped him see the defense a little better, understand what his role and what his job was supposed to be. So I think that Micah Parsons has a huge hand in it.
Definitely.
I also think the relationship, the marriage of him and Dan Quinn was wonderful. Yeah. And you see the divorce and new girlfriend with Mike Zimmer is kind of setting him up for really good success right now. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think a lot of people probably have the answer I have, so I don't think I'm going.
Jimmy Johnson?
Well, I'd say Bill Parcells. When he took Quincy Carter to 10-6, and I was like, how is this team in the playoffs? I think they lost to Carolina his first year in the playoffs. But I'm like, how in the world did he take Quincy Carter? And now people that are Cowboy fans, and nothing, Quincy might be listening, because I know he lives in the Metroplex.
Yes, and he is a fan.
I'm not taking a shot at Quincy here, even though it's going to sound like it. But I'm like, how in the world did he take a dude who couldn't win football games on a consistent basis, and he took that same quarterback, and now people here think Quincy Carter is a good NFL quarterback. Now, quickly, obviously, Quincy had his issues, and in a way, luckily he did, because it kept Tony Romo in the Dallas Cowboys organization. But I just remember that year going, this dude has to be a genius to take this team, this quarterback, and get it to the playoffs when it looked like it was still in a major rebuilding process after 3-5-11 seasons.
Yeah, because Kevin, I'm looking at 13-3 from the Jason Garrett 2016 team, and I feel like that was all talent. They won in spite of coaching with Linehan and Marinelli.
All right, I'm glad that you brought that up.
But I'll take it back to Wade Phillips with Jason Garrett and, I'm sorry, the defensive coordinator at the time. But I'll take it back to Wade Phillips' 13-3 year when he had Jason Garrett as the offensive coordinator and Brian Stewart as his defensive coordinator. Because he's a definite advantage as a defensive coordinator on the field.
And that's another argument that I know sometimes RJ drives people crazy with, his coaches don't particularly matter. But I do kind of struggle whether you're talking about Micah Parsons. Is it Dan Quinn, or is it a potentially generational defensive player coming along in Micah Parsons? Going back to 2016, did we have a coaching advantage? Or was it the fact that, and never forget this, make no mistake about this, Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott absolutely took the NFL by storm. They were the biggest story in the NFL, not locally, nationally.
That was an injection of youth into the team and hope based on the fact that they were like, oh no, another Romo year. And then it turns out, hold on, we actually have something. And it was all these veterans that were just ready to go.
Yeah. And so do I give some credit to the coaching staff? I don't think you should give no credit to the coaching staff. But at the
they rode a wave.
But at the same point, Ezekiel Elliott, I know eventually the draft pick got made fun of. He was freaking stoppable that first year. Mm-hmm. Like, unstoppable. There was never a game they were in that I thought they were going to lose. And you saw it with, I think it was Pittsburgh and Green Bay, and not the second Green Bay game. Well, they made comebacks and won. And so I do sometimes have a tough time balancing that out. It's like, How much of the credit does Jason Garrett get versus the veterans that you mentioned versus Zeke exploding on the scene versus Dak Prescott taking over?
I always felt like that Jason Garrett was the hand on the wheel guy, and it was never that he was the difference, but he was the reason that it never went too far one way. And that's why you were 8-8 so many times around him, because it was just always steady, but it never felt like you were going to have the difference. Now, when Mike McCarthy arrived, I really did think, man, this guy has some ideas that I really like, especially with the West Coast offense. I think the West Coast offense is fantastic. Can you advance the West Coast offense? Yes, people have. And I don't feel like he necessarily has. He's like, I got this book of plays that I really like. So I still feel like I'm losing it there. Now, what I'm starting to see, though, with this defense is I do feel like I have an advantage there. And then it comes to Bones. When it comes to Fossil, I don't know if I have an advantage in special teams. And I don't know the last time I felt like I had a special teams advantage. I know he's good, and I know he'll take a risk. But I don't know that I'm just like, we have the best special teams out there because of that guy.
Is it the...
But special teams is hard to create.
Is it the fake punts to nowhere that, like, pulled you back in?
You're like, why did you do it?
Yeah.
You know, and why did... And it should... Everybody knew that it was happening.
Yes.
Does he get the credit for Aubrey? Did he find him? Is that who?
I think Dak found him. I really
is that
do.
Right?
I really do think that was the case.
Well,
I don't
thank
know.
Thank you very much, Dak Prescott.
But whoever did deserves a lot of credit for that.
Agreed.
And I get it. That Fossil is a big risk taker.
Yes.
As a coordinator. And I think you have to be allowed to do that through the head coach, though. Because I'm sure that the head coach could say, shut that S down.
Yeah.
And obviously McCarthy has said, don't.
Yeah.
Keep trying different things.
No, I think that's fair. The thing that's got me kind of down about this is it seems like the consensus we've come to is it's probably been a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But then I wanted to ask on the other side, who are the coaches, whether it's a coordinator like Ben Johnson, whether it's a head coach like O'Connell, that you think, like, I think they bring an advantage to the table? Are those the people that you have in mind?
Ben Johnson does.
Yeah.
Like, offensively, the way he calls the game, I'll go back to, I think Dan Campbell's an advantage too.
Okay.
Because of the way Dan Campbell unabashedly goes about his business.
He really does.
We are this, and I don't care what you think about it. We're going for it. We're aggressive. And that's the way, like, Ben Johnson calls aggressive games because his head coach allows him to be aggressive, wants him to be aggressive. Now, would Ben Johnson be the same kind of guy if he got away from Dan Campbell and got away from that protection of Dan Campbell being able to say, I'm going to take on anything that goes bad, I'll take it. Don't worry about it. So I don't know the answer to that because I haven't seen it. Joe Brady, I think, is a difference maker. Look what he's done with that Buffalo offense that honestly, we thought it was going to be like, this year.
Oh, totally. I thought they were going to backslide for sure.
Yeah, Joe Brady is definitely a difference maker. I feel like Brian Flores is a defensive coordinator, is a difference maker. I have no clue about head coach because it sounds like he got screwed over there. So, yeah, there are a lot of other guys in. So Bobby Sloak's a really interesting name. Because Houston's not great this year.
Yeah.
Their injuries on the offensive line have been a big plague. But, hey, man, everybody gets injured. How are you going to respond and overcome that? But, yeah, there are plenty of names that I still think are difference makers for teams. Shanahan's one.
Okay.
Bill Belichick is a defensive-minded difference maker.
And I just wanted to make sure there were plenty of names there. Because if we took a step back, we're like, I don't think they bring us an advantage. And we're like, who does? And we're like, I don't know. But you just listed...
There are other people out there, yeah.
Coaches, offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators, and the point is they're not here, and it feels like they haven't been here for a while.
Yeah, and at some point you'd like to have the coaching staff that gives you the difference in a game, that gives you the edge in a win.
And that's why I'm not saying this is going to happen at all, but just hear me out. That's why whenever I know people are all up in arms because Stephen Jones said, hey, I think the offseason is going to be similar to the last offseason.
What'd you expect?
We don't have a lot of money. That's where there's no salary cap on coaches. So, like, let's say Ben Johnson wants $15 to $20 million. You can, if you would write the biggest check in the world to win a Super Bowl.
You just surpassed 11 digits on the value of your team.
So go out and get him. It costs you nothing against the cap, but that can be a huge addition to your team. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, it's time for Baseball Nuggets with Mike Bassick.
Last night, I think I want to start Kamar Rocker in AAA. Next. Oh.
Here's the 1-2. Swing and a miss. A weak wave on a slider. The 15th swing and a miss induced by Kamar Rocker tonight.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Don't forget, today you can see the G-Bag Nation at Hurtado in Arlington doing their show. And then tomorrow we'll be at Buffalo Wild Wings in Bedford if you want to come hang out with us. And right now, it's time for Baseball Nuggets with Mike Masick.
Okay, Ranger fans, hear me out.
Oh, dear.
I love Kamar Rocker.
Oh, dear.
I think Kamar Rocker is going to be a great pitcher for the Texas Rangers and could even be possibly a good pitcher for the Texas Rangers in 2025. When I say great, that means like all-star, a guy that you're like, we're pitching him game one or we're pitching him game seven and we feel good about it. I don't think Rocker is going to get to that level this year. I think he's going to be good for you, but I think he can be great as his as he progresses in his career. But after signing Nathan Eovaldi yesterday, I think there's three spots that are filled 100%. You don't even talk about it. And that is DeGrom is your number one, Eovaldi's your number two, and Bradford's your number three. Do you guys disagree with that?
I don't disagree with you. Just for people listening, can you tell me why you feel so secure with Bradford at number three?
I do.
He's my only, I guess this isn't the number one, but number one, he's my only left-handed starter.
Okay.
So yeah. So now I have a left-handed starter too. He's a strike thrower. He had a good year last year, and I remember he got hammered in Arizona. And then the next game he came back and had like a 7-inning shutout game or like
yep.
So like there was that mentality that kind of that you need. You're going to get beat up. There's going to be a game or two that you're going to get beat up during a season and maybe even more than a game or two. How do you bounce back from that? Or does it spiral you into a tough month? And it can do that. And it doesn't mean you're a bad pitcher, but I really liked what I saw from Bradford after he got hurt, got off to the best start of any Texas Ranger pitcher, and then unfortunately cracked a rib, I believe it was.
Okay.
And took him out for a while. He then came back and looked solid, and when he got just demolished in Arizona, he bounced back from that and had a good finish to the year.
All right. No, I'm with you. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Okay, so now I'm looking at three guys to fill two spots. If I'm completely healthy in spring, and let's be honest, like there's a good chance, like most teams, you're not going to have everybody healthy coming out of spring training. But there's Malley, Gray, and Rocker. Now, there's other guys. There's Dunning. There's Leiter. There's even you signed Hauser to a minor league deal. There's guys. There's Teoto, who you added to the 40-man, who I think is going to be more of a pen guy. But
and I think him and Leiter should be pen guys.
Yeah.
Like, as long as I don't want to change the conversation, but just as long as you're going to be looking for bullpen help, those are two people immediately I'm like, bullpen.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I think Teoto, because of his lack of command at the minor league level, it's scary to have him try to throw 100 pitches, and I need him to throw 60 strikes, if not close to 70, and I don't know if he's capable. My opinion, I'm not really seeing him throw much at all, except for in the futures game and stuff, but if I look at his stats, it would tell me he struggles to throw the ball where he wants to throw. Yep. With great stuff, but yeah. Struggles to throw the ball where he wants to throw. So Malley, Gray, and Rocker. Here's my issue with Rocker that I have to be very careful with in year one of a somewhat completely healthy season, we hope. Is when he was a freshman in 2019 at Vanderbilt, he threw 99 and two-thirds innings. The next year, he threw 15 innings because of COVID, right? The season started, the season ended. So he only got 15 innings because of COVID. The next year, his junior year, then where he was drafted by the New York Mets 9th or 10th overall, he threw 122 innings. He had 179 strikeouts. He had 39 base on balls. He was 14-4 with a 2.73 ERA. He had a great year as a junior pitching a full season with throwing over 100 innings, 122 to be exact. Well, then in 2022, he threw 34 innings. In 2023, he threw 28 innings. And last year, he threw combined in the majors and the minors 48 innings. So I look at that. And over the last 3 years, if I have my math correct, he didn't throw 100 innings in the last 3 years.
Wow.
So he's thrown 122 one time in his life. And that was in 2021 for Vanderbilt. So I'm looking at that number going, hey, I could be pushing him at 122. Like, that's like kind of where I want to be at. Him being completely healthy all year, I want to limit him to about 120 to 130 innings. Here's the issue in the major leagues. I can limit innings. I can. In fact, I'm going to probably have to do that a little bit with Jacob deGrom, and I'm going to have to do it a little bit with Tyler Mahle. But if I had a third guy in my five-man rotation that I'm limiting innings with and watching his arm and everything, how can I do that? I'm going to kill my bullpen. I'm going to get to the end of May, and I'm going to have guys' arms falling off. As my dad says, the guys can't wipe their ass anymore the rest of the season. So I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but that is a baseball thing.
Because their arms
thing.
Are so tired.
Yes.
Yeah.
You mind if I ask a question in this?
Because no, you can't. You can't do it.
All right, fine. Yeah. F it. I'm out of here.
Hey, can I ask a question for Court?
last year wasn't a great year. Do you know
Rangers in general?
Right.
Okay.
How many pitchers pitched 120 innings or more last year?
For the Rangers?
Yeah.
I know Evo did because I think he threw 170. John Gray?
Nope.
Okay.
Heaney had 160.
Okay.
Other than that, Lorenzen, all of them were under 120. They were able to do it last year while he was still in the pros, but they weren't good. So that's what I'm trying to, they can still get him in and get 120.
Right. Michael Lorenzen, though, when did he start?
It was later in the season.
Late April is when he joined the team. I'm trying to remember, but like, so here's what I can do with Kamar Rocker, and I love him. Remember, I love him, and I think he's going to be a valuable part of the 2025 Texas Rangers. I build him up in spring training because I don't know who's going to be hurt and who's not. I'm going to build him up ready to throw five innings to start the year. But if I have a healthy Mahle and Gray, Bradford, Evaldi, and DeGrom, I have this opportunity, and I'm not trying to screw over Rocker. And I don't really care how he does in spring training. We've been to spring training. It doesn't matter if you have a 1 ERA or you bat 600 in spring training. That does not mean anything to the success you're going to have at the major league level. AKA Wyatt Langford last year, who was the best player in all of baseball in the month of February and March. But it didn't mean in the month of April, May, and June, he was the most successful player, even close to the most successful player on the Texas Rangers. So if I can throw Rocker in his first start in AAA, three innings, and go, that's good. It's three innings. Good start. You built up. Now the next start, and you only throw once a week in the minor leagues. You're not throwing even every fifth day because you have every Monday off. So you're pretty much just throwing once a week. Next week, I throw him four innings, maximum of 70 pitches.
Yeah.
Whichever one comes first. Next game, I'm throwing him four innings again. So now I am into April 20th, let's say, and he's only thrown 15 innings. 4+4+3.
Yeah.
Next start. Now, I know that this is like the perfect situation because everybody's staying healthy in the major leagues. His next start, I maybe give him five innings and like up to 90 pitches. So now I got through the month of April with him throwing 20 innings. I have 5 months left in the season, and I still have 100 innings to work with, if this makes sense. So I have to limit him somehow, some way. And the worst thing that can happen, and this wouldn't be the worst because this means you're in a playoff race, is the Steven Strasburg situation.
Yeah.
And that is, you are the Washington Nationals and you are possibly a favorite to go to the World Series. And I'm sorry, I forget what year. It's like 2012 through 2014, somewhere in that area. And they're like, we got to shut down Steven Strasburg because we have this many innings set for him. He's reached that amount and we are really good and we don't want to push it. Now, did that help him or hurt him? The thing is we don't know because he didn't. It wasn't like he had a very healthy career, but he did pitch him to a championship in 2019. So I look at Rocker and I go, if he's only thrown one time in his whole life, 100 innings or more, and that was in 2021.
Four years ago.
I want him the next 6 years. I want him to pitch healthy for me 2025 through 2030. Now, hopefully I get him longer than that. Maybe I don't. He's going to be 25 years old. Maybe I'd never offer him a long-term contract because of pitchers and arms and everything. But I look at Rocker and I go, with the signing of Evaldi, and it'll be interesting. If you get Montgomery, I think this is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
But with the signing of Eovaldi, I have the ability to watch Rocker's innings while still letting him develop. I think we have to remember, too, is maybe I'm going to be wrong on this. Maybe he's going to be, I bring this to my teammate, CC Sabathia, who I know there were people in Cleveland's organization in 2001 who said, look, he's not ready. Now, he wasn't dealing with injuries in the minor leagues, but they're like, he's ready. And he's not ready. Like, give him more time to develop. Why are we having to rush him? And he probably would have been Rookie of the Year if there wouldn't have been Ichiro. But Ichiro won Rookie of the Year and MVP that year. So, I mean, CC was able to handle it well and be great. And maybe Rocker will, too, with a whole healthy offseason. I know he's working out at Vanderbilt a lot right now, along with Jack Leiter. But I look at Rocker and I say, I don't have to have him in the major leagues. And it's not a demotion. It's not a, oh, he's not ready.
It's a big picture
It's a big picture thing with how many innings I have for him. And then also, I have to protect DeGrom. I'm going to be honest.
Absolutely.
I don't care about Mally as much, but I do kind of have to protect him because, look, he came back from a major injury where he didn't pitch a ton in 2023. He didn't pitch barely at all in 2024. And after he got done pitching, like, we immediately had to shut him down.
Yep.
And so now Mally is a guy I have to worry about what he has in the tank when we get to August and September. So can I have three guys in the rotation that I have to really watch how much I'm throwing them? I think the answer is no. I cannot do it from April through September. So maybe Rocker starts in AAA, works on his game for approximately a month, and then May through September, he's in the major leagues. And hopefully by that time, I have DeGrom.
For the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, it's time for Gridiron Gravy. Would you really want this record or to be on this list? We'll do it next right here on The Fan.